Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now the Russ Belville Show. Streaming at 620kpoj.com and on the air at AM 620 KPOJ.
This is the Russ Belville Show, the winner of America's search for the next great progressive talk radio star. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Welcome to the weekend, everyone. I'm Radical Russ, and you've reached the Russ Belville Show, the home for truly radical progressives here in the airwaves. Hey, we're broadcasting from the free speech zone that I call America, particularly a little town called Portland, Oregon. And we're broadcasting from the flagship studios of AM 620 KPOJ, streaming online at 620kpoj.com and blogging at radicalrust.net. If you'd like to get involved and let everyone know your opinions, you can reach us on the phone at 866-5577-377. Oh, it's quite the weekend here, and we got a lot to talk about today. Ricky Champagne's back there on the board, as well as Jam and Josh holding down the things for engineering. We're going to get right onto it, as we always do here at the Russ Belville Show, with our Week in a Minute. That's right. President Bush, for the second time, vetoes stem cell research that could cure diseases he can't pronounce.
Caitlin was born with spina bifida.
A missing U.S. soldier's wife will not be deported to the Dominican Republic. Tom Tancredo is inconsolable.
When we go under, Western civilization goes under.
After 5 years, the U.S. releases two innocent men from Gitmo so they can be tortured back home.
If detainees been rendered by us, including the CIA, to countries that use torture.
Walmart has come up with a way to get their customers to pay to use their own money to shop at Walmart. A new report shows talk radio is dominated by right-wing conservatives.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
Despite the clear text of Article 2, the vice president claims he's not a part of the executive branch.
What?
And speaking of Article 2, 219 years ago this week, the Constitution became the official law of the United States of America.
We're a nation of laws, and we must enforce our laws.
Wow, wouldn't that be nice, enforcing some of our laws? I'm all for that. And of course, a little less than 6.5 years ago this week, that Constitution became the official toilet paper of the White House.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier. Just so long as I'm the dictator.
Yeah, we're inching closer and closer toward that dictatorship, it seems, every day. We've only got 575 more days left of the Bush administration, though. Unless, of course, we brought that impeachment back on the table. We could have gotten rid of him a lot quicker if that was on the table, couldn't we? Well, as we always do here at the Russ Belville Show, we also want to update you with all the latest news stories. And I mentioned that report about the conservative talk radio and how talk radio is all dominated by the right wing. Fascinating report. We're going to dig real deep into that here in the next segment. Specifically, we are going to have our first guest here on the Russ Belville Show, John Halpin, who's one of the senior fellows from the Center of American Progress, who wrote this report, one of the co-authors of the report, will be here on the line with us to talk about the report and to figure out what we can do to get more progressive talk out there on the airwaves. We're also going to take a look at the vice president, like we said, and Walmart and a whole bunch of other subjects. But, of course, the number one issue in the news that we always have to deal with here at the Russ Belville Show is the latest news from Iraq. Yes, since we last spoke last weekend, 39 more U.S. servicemen have died in George W. Bush's occupation of Iraq, bringing the total now to 3,555 dead, 25,830 wounded, and $436 billion spent and counting. You know, this is something I just have to do. You're not going to hear this anywhere else. The Russ Belville Show is the only one that's going to bring it to you, because so many people out there, when they talk about this war, they're only focused mostly on what the stats are, you know, what these numbers come out. You know, 7 soldiers died this week, or 3 soldiers died. But you never hear the names. And, you know, that just burns me, because this is about real people. These aren't just numbers. We can't just spit out some numbers and everybody just becomes kind of numb to that. So you're going to get that here at the Russ Belville Show. I'm going to keep telling you the names of our brave men and women who are out there, who have with integrity and honor served this country, only to be betrayed, betrayed by our civilian leadership, who have put them into a position where they can't possibly win, trying to use guns and tanks and bombs to solve a political situation. So, we honor the memory of Sergeant Sean Martin, Staff Sergeant Stephen Wilson, Sergeant First Class William Zapfe, Private First Class Joshua Modgling, Specialist Daryl Linder, Private First Class Larry Parks Jr., Sergeant Eric Snell, Private First Class David Wilkie Jr., First Lieutenant Frank Walkup IV, Sergeant Danny Soto, Specialist Zachary Grass, Private First Class Michael Patrick Pittman, Major Kevin Sonnenberg, Sergeant Richard Parker, Specialist Dusty Brisky, Staff Sergeant Michael A. Beckert, Sergeant Derek T. Roberts, Specialist Fareed Aluzuzi, and Specialist Val John Borm, as well as 19 other brave U.S. servicemen whose names have not been released yet, pending the notification of their families. It's a little more serious when you hear the names, isn't it? When you think that every one of those people out there is a father or a mother or a brother or sister or son or daughter of an American. And there's so many families back here that are suffering because of this war. So I just want you to remember that. And that's why we do that here every week here on the Russ Belville Show. Because, again, we need to remember that these are people. These are people we're talking about. They're not just numbers. Now, speaking of people, I wanted to get to this story also, since this has to do a lot with the military and also leads into another one of the big issues that's out there these days, that immigration issue. This is the story of Specialist Alex Jimenez. You may have heard about the three U.S. soldiers who'd been kidnapped in Iraq by insurgents, and this happened way back on May 12th. So this has been, what, over a month, maybe 5 weeks now, 6 weeks that these soldiers have been missing. And these insurgents posted a video on the internet that showed that they were claiming that they killed these soldiers and they buried their bodies. In the video, they show the soldiers' IDs as proof that they had the soldiers. One of those soldiers was found, one of the bodies of one of those soldiers was found floating in the Euphrates River. So there's speculation, of course, that perhaps Specialist Jimenez is no longer alive, that the insurgents may have carried through with their threat and killed him. So where this intersects with the immigration issue is that Specialist Jimenez is married to a woman named Yaderlin. I'm not exactly sure how to pronounce the name, but she came here to America illegally from the Dominican Republic back in 2001. And this is because, you know, she had met Specialist Jimenez, you know, overseas, and, you know, they fell in love and they wanted to get married. So she came to America and they got married. And then the authorities didn't even know that she was here in the country illegally. Okay, so here's Specialist Jimenez and his wife living here in America, and Specialist Jimenez wanted to follow the rules, you know, wanted to be a good American and follow the rules, obey the law. So he applied or tried to get his wife a green card, you know, with immigration. And as soon as he did that, that's what alerted them to the fact that she was here, and they began deportation proceedings. That's right, deportation proceedings against the wife of a U.S. serviceman who's fighting over there in Iraq and has been captured and kidnapped and is potentially dead. And so his wife is here in the States waiting for news on two fronts. She wants to know, first of all, whether or not her husband's still alive, and second of all, whether or not she's going to be able to stay in this country. And if she was deported, it's going to take her 10 years before she could come back to the U.S. That's the waiting period. So that's how we're going to treat the wife of a U.S. serviceman, is to threaten to deport her? Well, this story got a little bit of traction in the news, and because of it, the Immigration Service, the DHS, Department of Homeland Security, has decided to forestall those immigration proceedings. They've decided to cancel the deportation for Mrs. Jimenez there, and they say, we're not going to go forward with it. We're going to consider this case closed. Well, isn't that nice that one family that would be hurt by this immigration law and this immigration craziness out there would get some reprieve? But what about the other millions of families out there? Every time we talk about this immigration debate, again, I get back to the fact that people forget we're talking about humans, people that we should care about, people that are living on the lowest rungs of society. we're judged by how we treat the least among us. At least that's what I was taught when I was a kid. So, you know, it's great that they canceled the deportation here for Jimenez. All I ask is that we give the same sort of consideration to other immigrant families, other people who this immigration debate is going to separate families and tear families apart. You know, if we're progressives, we've got to be about standing up for the little guy. We've got to be about standing up for the American family because, you know, God knows the Republicans aren't going to do it. The conservatives aren't going to do it. It's up to us. It's 16 after. I'm Russ Belville, and after the break, we're going to be back talking about the domination of talk radio by the right wing with John Halpin from the Center for American Progress. So stick around.
KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com. This is the Russ Belville Show, the winner of America's search for the next great progressive talk radio star.
We're Americans. Nobody likes Americans. The lunatic is on the grass. Then we're Christians. That's not popular anymore. Remembering games. I'm human. Daisy chains and blocks. I'm white. Got to keep the, on the, the majority of humans don't like white.
Yeah, that's lunatic time. Yeah, that's Glenn Beck, one of the many, many, many conservative right-wing talk show hosts that are out there on your talk radio airwaves. I'm Russ Belville, and welcome to the Russ Belville Show. We're talking about, talk radio, and you ever notice when you're, you know, driving through America, and I've done a lot of road trips driving through America, and you turn on the talk radio, and just everywhere you turn on the dial, it's some righty out there. I mean, Rush Limbaugh, Glenn Beck, Sean Hannity, G. Gordon Liddy, all these guys. So I'm going to turn to one of the experts now. We just had a report that came out from the Center for American Progress and Free Press called The Structural Imbalance of Political Talk Radio. And this report was authored by many people, including my next guest, who is a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress, author of this study, one of the co-authors, John Halpin, is on the line with me. Welcome, John, to the Russ Belville Show.
Oh, thank you, Russ. Pleasure to be with you.
So just tell me, just let my listeners know here, because I'm pretty new to the talk radio game. Center for American Progress was, just under fair disclosure, is part of the contest I won to get here on this talk radio show. But am I wrong in saying that it's just an incredible imbalance there with the righties out there?
No, you're not wrong at all. And our study examined the 257 news talk stations owned by the five largest commercial station owners, CBS, Clear Channel, Citadel, Cumulus, and Salem. And what we found was that 91% of the political talk radio programming on these stations every weekday is conservative and 9% is progressive.
91%? Wow.
91%, yeah, about 2,570 hours of conservative talk radio broadcast each weekday compared to 254 hours of progressive talk, 10 times as much.
That's amazing, and I only get two of them.
Yeah.
So, wow. So, John, if I may here, and also I just wanted to give some credit to the other co-authors, James Heidbreder, Mark Lloyd, and of course Paul Woodall, who I consider to be one of the greatest judges of talk radio talent out there. Okay, yes. So he voted for me. So he voted for you. But how does this work out now when we talk about the media markets? Because a lot of what I hear from the right wing, because they've been going nuts on this. I've been listening to talk radio.
Absolutely,
they've been going nuts here.
Yeah.
They say that, you know, that it's just because that's consumer demand. That's what people want to listen to is conservative talk. I mean, I don't believe that, but what did your study find?
Well, it's not true at all. They have this argument that this is just pure consumer demand, that the market is driving this. But you and I both know that radio markets are not normal markets. That you there are a limited number of licenses. You sign a contract, and when you get that free public license, which are worth $5 billion collectively at least, you have some public interest obligations. It's not a normal market. And especially after 96, when the ownership caps were blown and there was this consolidation of the ownership groups, it's a very difficult game to get into. So it's not a normal competitive market in any stretch of the imagination, and it's under certain public interest obligations, unlike other types of markets.
So we have a lack of diversity in ownership. That's the big problem.
That was the big finding of our study. We, you know, we interestingly, of course, the right wing is sort of attacking. Oh, you know, on one hand they say, of course, talk radio is conservative. On the other hand, they're now saying, oh, we don't believe your data. So they try to have it both ways. So yeah, you know, I'm waiting for their study showing the imbalance towards progressives. That will be interesting, but. But what we then did further analysis. We didn't expect the findings to be all that surprising, so we then tried to look at why this is the case. And we did statistical analysis of all 10,506 licensed stations in the country and looked at a variety of causal patterns that might lead to this. And what we found is if you have more, you know, local owner, minority owner, female-owned station, you're less likely to air conservative talk and more likely to air other types of programming.
When the talk radio is all owned by rich conservative white men, we get a whole lot of rich conservative white men on the air? Is that the idea here?
Well, you get a fair amount of that. I mean,
yeah.
It's starting to change. I mean, Clear Channel, who Cap's done a lot of work with, obviously, they broadcast the most in terms of overall hours progressive talk. And they claim to be pretty big backers of the format, so it's not uniform. But you've got Citadel, Cumulus, and Salem, which are essentially 100% conservative. There's not even a minute of progressive talk on those stations.
So. That was one of the stats that I caught off your report that I thought was really interesting, is that out of those 257 stations that you surveyed, 236 of them don't broadcast a single minute of progressive talk. And the way I would look at it is, like, if every store in the country was only selling, well, 90% of the stores in the country were selling Coke and 10% were selling Pepsi, you couldn't make the argument that Coke was more popular because, well, it's just the only thing you can get in some cities.
Yeah, I think that's a great analogy, and we've used a similar one. And you know, people, if you then went to every store in town and that was the only thing they were selling, you'd be pretty unhappy. And if you found out it's not because people only want one kind of soda, it's because that's all the owners are putting out, you'd start to get pretty upset about it. And if you look even deeper into the data, you have to keep in mind here as well that a lot of progressive talk is on pretty subpar signals. I mean, in Washington, D.C., AM 1260, you pretty much can't pick that up two blocks from the White House in your car. You can't even hear it.
Yeah.
So we looked at the 59 stations with the most powerful signals. This is 50,000 watts or more. And only three stations in the entire country, in Miami, LA, and Seattle, broadcast any progressive talk. So,
wow.
So,
really?
You know, when people talk about the marketplace, it's a heavily skewed marketplace. If you take Sean Hannity's show, for example, Hannity was on WABC. ABC Radio decides to launch him simultaneously in seven different places on the most powerful signals around. And there wasn't pent-up demand for Sean Hannity. They pushed him out. The same thing with Bill O'Reilly.
Yeah, it's like here's what you're going to get. And, you know, on the radio waves, you don't have any other choice. Then that's what you're going to listen to.
Right.
I mean, I know here in Portland, Oregon, I'm here at KPOJ, AM 620.
Mm-hmm.
It's got one of the best stations progressive talk-wise in the country. And yet I still have to compete with three other conservative stations owned by the same company.
Right. So even in a market where progressive talk is doing well, they'll still stick progressive talk up against, you know, three or four different powerful conservative stations.
Yes.
So it's not.
Well, I'd like to talk a little bit more about this, John, if I could. I got a hard break coming up here. Can you stay on the line with me?
Sure.
Okay. We'll be right back after the break with John Halpin from Center for American Progress. And we're talking about the conservative domination of talk radio, taking your calls a little bit later.
KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com. Our red state refugee, Radical Russ. This is the Russ Belville Show.
33 after the hour. Our number here is 866-5577. 377, and the subject is talk radio and the conservative domination all across this country.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
Yeah, I'm as mad as hell, too. Hey, it's about time us progressives get a chance here at the marketplace. You know, conservatives are always talking about the marketplace of ideas and how the market can solve everything, but if you don't let other people compete in the market, then you can't claim that the market saves everything. We're talking also with John Halpin, who's a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress and author of this new study, The Structural Imbalance in Political Talk Radio. John, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
I just wanted to cover a couple of these other just amazing stats that you guys pulled out from this report. In the top 10 media markets in the country, when you talk about the biggest media markets, three out of those top 10 markets, Philadelphia, Houston, and Dallas, have no progressive talk radio anywhere on the dial. And then Atlanta, a fourth one, only gets about 4% of its hourly programming is progressive talk. So, John, what can we do about this? I mean, I hear some of these righties saying that it's about the fairness doctrine, and we're trying to force them to have balanced amount of right and left-wing speech. What's the truth to that?
Yeah, well, that's just muddle-headed, factually inaccurate statements that you would expect from right-wing talk show hosts who didn't actually read the report. In fact, our report explicitly dismisses the fairness doctrine as a solution to this, primarily because, one, we don't think it will work, and two, like everybody else, we're not entirely comfortable with the FCC regulating content and speech. Besides, our data shows clearly that what matters here more than anything is ownership, and ownership diversity in particular. If you want diverse airwaves, you want diverse programming, you have to diversify ownership. It's a pretty straightforward idea. It used to be the norm in broadcasting. It was all blown up in the 80s under Reagan. And then when the ownership caps were blown in the mid-90s, it became much easier for these big group owners to buy up all the stations, control all the licenses, and push out one-sided information in many ways.
Yeah, like Clear Channel here, I noticed, went from, like, what, 40 stations to about 1,200?
Yeah,
is that right?
They grew exponentially in many ways. And it's the same with some of these other places. And you know, it's not surprising that when you gobble up this much airspace in many ways, that you're going to try and maximize that in terms of profit. So you tend to turn towards nationally syndicated hosts, which is where Rush and Sean Hannity and Liddy and all these guys sort of come into play.
Because that's going to be cheaper than developing your local talent.
Yeah, exactly. Instead of finding local talent, developing and putting some marketing money into it and other things like that, you have a handful of shows you put money behind and you pump them out on all your stations.
So could you say that this isn't necessarily that corporations want to have, corporate speakers? It's more just profit. It's just more their cost savings.
Well, I think that's what they'll argue. And part of what, I think Clear Channel is starting to realize, some of the others we wish we'd realize as well, is that there is an audience for progressive talk. They need to take advantage of that, and that I think they all understand as well that it's not easy to develop these things. When Rush Limbaugh launched, nobody would buy the thing. Nobody would touch it. It took a couple of years to get Rush to the level he is, and so they put progressive talk on subpar signals and then claim, oh, nobody wants to listen to it. Well, that's not how the radio works.
Yeah. That's like if the only store that sold Pepsi was located in the bad neighborhood and was filthy, no one would go to this neighborhood to buy Pepsi.
That's right. And that's sort of what's going on here, and they claim that this is the wonder of the free market.
Yeah. Well, let's take a look at another side of this issue. We're talking about, broadcasting on the public airwaves. I think some people lose track of that idea that in our system of government here, we've decided the airwaves are a public trust. They're part of the commons. They're part of the general welfare. And in the old days, when you wanted to renew your license for a station, you had to have a whole lot more local control over that. Can you elaborate a little bit on that idea?
Yeah, one of the big recommendations we have in here is trying to restore local accountability over the licensing process. When most of the regulations were gutted under Reagan, one of the first things that went over time was getting rid of a 3-year licensing period and basically implementing an 8-year one that you can fulfill essentially by sending in a postcard and you get a license for 8 years. The way it should actually work, if you're going to meet local and community needs, is you should have to notify the community your license is coming up. You should hold hearings. You should have, lots of local input. And people can kind of say, what is it they like and don't like about what some of these stations are doing. And it's a fair and open debate about this stuff. And Again, it's not a normal market. You get a license based on some public interest obligations. And right now, you know, you're in Portland and your owner may be in Texas and they don't have a particular interest in understanding what's going on in Portland. It sounds like at least they're trying to if they're putting you on the air.
Yeah, they're definitely taking a shot there, huh?
but in many places, it's, you know, these kind of disconnected corporate owners who have no connection to local community needs and they're not paying attention to that. So it's not even just conservative talk radio. It's the same thing with music stations and other things like that. I mean, people bemoan the state of commercial radio overall. It's all connected somehow.
Certainly, certainly. And, you know, the thing about it, too, is that it doesn't match. And, again, we're talking with John Halpin from the Center for American Progress about the report, The Structural Imbalance of Political Talk Radio. And when we look at the demographics of people who listen to talk radio, there is, you know, it does tend to be a little bit more male, a little more conservative, a little older than just your average American. But still, when we break down the stats here, 43% of regular radio listeners, talk radio listeners, call themselves conservative. Now, they've got the plurality, but 23% of those people identify as liberal and 30% as moderate, and we're not serving that audience.
Right, right. I mean, you know, the majority of the existing audience is more diverse than just conservatives. And if you're to talk about potential audience, we know it's not 90-10 one way, which is essentially the split we get in programming today. So, I mean, again, if you go to the market-by-market data, it's interesting. Conservatives like to say, oh, we're filling a niche in all these liberal cities where we don't have a voice, so people turn to talk radio. Well, that would make sense if there were differential patterns, but there aren't. So
right.
In Dallas, which is a conservative city, it's 100% conservative radio. There's no progressive niche there. That doesn't make any sense. In San Francisco, 70% of the talk radio is conservative. You know, that might fit their theory, but it doesn't hold up for cities like, you know, Dallas or Houston, which we know are fairly conservative. You would expect under this niche argument that you would at least have some progressive talk.
Absolutely. And the thing is when the people get the choice, when they get the opportunity to listen to the progressive radio, they really flock to it. Here, like I say, here in Portland, KPOG has been a huge success story. They're getting blockbuster ratings. They went from something like 23rd in the market up to like first as far as ratings or something like that.
Yeah.
And Ed Schultz, I was watching Ed Schultz the other day on MSNBC, and Ed Schultz hosts the number one progressive talk radio show in the country. And I, of course, consider him to be a man of keen intellect and sharp instinct for discovering new talent. Okay, yeah, he voted for me too.
Yeah.
but Ed Schultz was saying, you know, he beats Hannity in Denver, he beats him in Seattle, he beats him in Portland, he beats him in San Diego. I mean, everywhere he goes up against Sean Hannity, he beats him. So, you know, why doesn't he have 200 stations? Why doesn't he have 300 stations like Hannity does?
Yeah, you couldn't have said it better. I mean, Ed's appearance on MSNBC the other night really, really kind of struck home. Somebody who's in the middle of dealing with this thing, and that's exactly the problem. It's not a balancing of supply and demand. It's that somebody controls all the microphones, and they're pushing out certain voices on that.
Absolutely. Ed Schultz is beating up on Sean Hannity in market after market. Here in Portland, Randy Rhodes is beating Lars Larson. He's our local righty here, and he's beating him in his own backyard. And then there was that, and a lot of people may not have heard of this, but when Armed Forces Radio, the radio that's going out to all of our, you know, servicemen out there overseas and locally, they got Rush Limbaugh on the air, but they won't put Ed on the air. And there was a big brouhaha about that.
Right. There's a big fight over that. Yeah. I mean, again, it sort of goes to, it's probably why they're all hysterical about all of this stuff, because we're raising pretty straightforward ideas. They're clearly unfair in multiple ways, at least the marketplace itself. We're not talking about taking anybody off the air or regulating anybody's content. It's just saying that the marketplace itself is essentially rigged to one side right now. We want to correct that.
Excellent. Well, this is speaking with John Halpin from the Center for American Progress. He's one of the co-authors on this report, The Structural Imbalance of Political Talk Radio. Before I let you go, John, I wanted to just have you address one more point. I heard one of these nutso conservatives on one of the talk radio's stations saying that this was all a plot by the Center for American Progress to help Hillary Clinton. how much credence do you want to give that? Huh?
They're certainly imaginative there. Yeah. No, it's not anybody's plot. It's a pretty obvious sort of empirical look at what a lot of people intuitively knew to begin. We don't expect this, or, you know, we would never want it to help anyone in particular. I mean, it's It's just sort of a silly argument.
Yeah, I'll give truth to that because you guys put me on the air, and I am no Hillary Clinton fan. So right there, we've just blown that right out of the water.
Right.
Well, thank you, John. I really appreciate you calling in today. John Halpin from the Center for American Progress, along with Free Press, who put out this report, The Structural Imbalance of Political Talk Radio. You can take a look at that at thinkprogress.org. There'll be a link for that. I'll also put a link up to it on my website, radicalrust.net. It's 43 after the hour. We'll be taking your calls at 866-5577-377.
KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
First-time caller? That's okay. He's a first-time host. The winner of the search for the next great progressive talk radio star. This is the Russ Belville Show.
46 after the hour, and again, we're talking about the imbalance in political talk radio and how the conservatives are unfairly dominating the market here in progressive talk. There was one more point I wanted to make about this after that interview with John Halpin from Center for American Progress. One of the things that he briefly touched on and that I wanted to go a little farther on was when these righties come out and say that, well, the media is so liberal with TV and newspapers, it's all so liberal that talk radio is the only place where we have to go. I mean, yeah, the liberal media. Yeah, I love that one. The liberal media. Yeah, is that the liberal media? Is that the one that's owned by the defense contractors, GE? Is that the liberal media you're talking about? Or are you talking about that liberal TV where 4 out of 5 guests on the political talk shows are always conservatives? Is that the liberal media you're talking about? Or would it be those liberal newspapers like the New York Times that helped cheerlead us into a war and unquestionably supported the Bush maladministration? Administration when they were lying us into a war? Is that the liberal media you're talking about? So I want to know what you think about this, of course. The phone number is 866-5577-377. We're going to go to the phones right now. We've got Virginia from Portland. Welcome to the Russ Belville Show.
Morning, Russ. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Virginia.
Listen, I think they're going to be all upset about this report because they know we beat them head-to-head, and it scares the you-know-what out of them. The true audience for right-wing radio is some portion of those people who still support the president, which is under 30%.
Down to 26% now, the latest Newsweek one.
And I have to assume even among those people who support the president, there are some people, I don't know why they're supporting him, but some people, even among them, who are not great fans of this right-wing media, because who with any brain at all can sit and listen to Rush Limbaugh invent reality all day.
It's an amazing thing. The man should be writing scripts for Hollywood. It's just
he just invents stuff and then he punches it and he invents something else and punches it, and that's all he does all day.
Well, you know, Virginia, Oxycontin's a hell of a drug. You can
it
make
is.
You say
it must
you say,
be. It
make
must
say all
be.
Sorts of things.
It must be. I think their pushback is because obviously if they think they have 40-some% of the market, then somebody else has near 60% of the market, don't they?
Yeah.
And if you open up those airwaves, we'll swamp them.
I agree. Thank you, Virginia, for your call. I appreciate that. Yeah, it's like Al Franken used to always say when he was on the air, that we are the smart, talented, funny ones. That's what they're afraid of. Amadeus in Portland is also on the line. Amadeus, welcome to the Russ Belville Show.
Hey, Russ. I want to tell you, man, I love the show. I've been listening to you for the past, few weeks, and you're great, man.
Oh, thank you very much, Amadeus.
The biggest thing, yesterday I was listening to a guy, Mark Levin, Sean Hannity's little pet.
Yes, yes.
And he was talking about this whole thing, and I haven't had a chance to see take a look at the report, but I'm glad you had this interview today because it kind of gives me a little bit more oomph to go and read about it and stuff from your site. But I'll tell you what, I'm kind of a type of guy who believes in kind of fair and balanced, where folks can, you can hear both sides, of the political, arguments.
Yes.
And, the way it is now, man, if you look at, you're saying, the media, it's so imbalanced to the right. And every channel you turn on, besides KPOJ, and I think there's, another you know, channel here that you could pick up in poor lighting. It's like 970 or some or whatever. I don't know. But it's just, you know, there's no other viewpoints out there besides the right, you know. And
so absolutely.
I think there does need to be something put back into the works where we have a fair and balanced, you know, choices that people can go to. And like you said, you know, KPOJ, I mean, I was thinking, you know, when it first came out that it was just this greatest thing. And, you know, it turned out to just be, it is great. And
absolutely.
I think people are turning to it. They like it. They want a choice. I mean, I know a lot of conservatives that actually listen to KPOJ, and they enjoy hearing the other point, even though they don't agree with it. They
yeah.
Just hear what the other side's talking about. So, anyway.
Well, thank you, Amadeus. I've got to get to a break, so I appreciate your point of view. And, yeah, I totally agree. I mean, that's what America's all about, is the free market marketplace of ideas. And that's the only way that we can have a functioning democracy, is through the free exchange of ideas. We're going to take more of your calls right after the break here. It's 51 after Mike in Vancouver. Hang on. We'll get right to you after the break.
Is the Russ Belville Show, the winner of America's search for the next great progressive talk radio star. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
55 after the hour, the conservative domination of talk radio. How are we going to end it? That's what we're talking about here on the Russ Belville Show. And I've got Mike in Vancouver, Washington, who's been patiently hanging on the line. Mike, you're on the air.
Thank you so much. Good morning.
Good morning.
You know, I have to admit, I was a bit of a Kool-Aid drinker on the fairness doctrine, and until probably sometime after the first week of last November, it occurred to me that, well, even with the imbalance, the way things are, I think the fairness doctrine itself is very problematic. The problem is there is some credence to some of the fear-mongering on the right, because you see a lot of, if you read the blogs, you'll see a lot of people posting who think, oh, this is the magic bullet. Oh, just bring back the fairness doctrine.
Yeah, I don't agree with that.
And I don't really remember what it was like during the fairness doctrine, but you hear a lot of other talkers. I know Tom Hartman, he has spoken very strongly against that. And just thinking about it, it just seems very unworkable to me. Most issues, there aren't two sides to an issue. Most issues are more nuanced than that anyway.
Absolutely. Well, the way the fairness doctrine used to work, and I got a hard break coming up here real quick, so thanks for calling, Mike. I got to keep rolling. As far as that fairness doctrine goes, the original point of it was the idea that if you're going to have one side on the air, speaking about, you know, Republican or conservative values, that the stations were kind of under a public obligation to give as much time to the opposite side. But again, like you said, that ignores the idea that most problems aren't binary. Most problems aren't black and white. There's a lot of nuance to them. Nobody here on the left is saying that we need to have someone sitting there with a stopwatch that says, all right, you've talked for an hour on the right, now you got to let us talk for an hour on the left. That's not it at all. We are all for the free marketplace of ideas. You put us on as many stations as you put the conservatives on, and let's just see who more people are going to listen to. But if you're putting progressive talk on a 5,000-watt station that you can't pick up, you know, two blocks from the White House, having to compete against a 50,000-watt station that's got Rush Limbaugh on it, well, of course progressive talk's going to lose. Who wants to listen to static? Who wants to listen to a bad signal? And it's, again, it's about the media consolidation. It's the fact that you got a company like Clear Channel here, and fair disclosure, I'm working at a Clear Channel station right now, a company like Clear Channel that goes from having 40 stations back in 1996 when the Telecommunications Act was passed by Bill Clinton, by the way, that the Telecommunications Act was passed, and they went from 40 stations to 1,200 stations. Well, of course they're going to maximize their profits. You know, there's an analogy here. There's some an analog to the oil industry, in a sense. You've seen the same thing with the oil industry, how they've all consolidated. There's no longer, you know, dozens and dozens of oil producers. It's Chevron, Texaco, and Exxon Mobil. And now that there's only five companies controlling the oil, look how expensive gas is. It's because they all want to maximize their profits. Like my interviewee, John Halpin, was saying, if you've got 1,200 stations, what are you going to do? Spend the money to develop local talent in 1,200 different places with all the costs and the marketing and the advertising? Or are you just going to develop one guy and one marketing plan and push that out to 1,200 stations? Well, we've seen what has happened, and you get Hannity on 300 stations. That's what happens. I'm Russ Belville. This is the Russ Belville Show, the home for truly radical progressives. Coming around the top of the hour, I got plenty more.
Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now the Russ Belville Show. Streaming at 620kpoj.com and on the air at AM 620 KPOJ.
This is the Russ Belville Show, the winner of America's search for the next great progressive talk radio star. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Bienvenidos and welcome to the weekend. I'm Radical Russ, and you're listening to Political Talk for the regular guys out there. Yeah, we're broadcasting from the free speech zone that I call America, specifically from the banks of the Willamette River here in Rose City, Portland, Oregon. And I'm Radical Russ. I'm just a working class survivor of Bush's America. Just want to talk to you a little bit about what's going on in our country. And I'd also like to give a big welcome to our listeners who are joining us now at 1360 KLSD in San Diego. You know, when I heard that KLSD was going to be broadcasting me today, I thought that was great. I thought it was really appropriate for me because, well, I grew up in the Mormon Church. No, that's just a joke there. glad to have you there, folks, down there in San Diego. I'm starting on the left coast, and I'm spreading eastward like a virus. Okay, speaking of viruses and speaking of nasty things that are spreading, let's talk about Vice President Cheney for just a little bit here. Oh, no, the Vice President. You know, there's some news here about the Vice President this week that, boy, you know, when you hear these things that come out of the right wing and come out of the White House and this administration over the past 6 years, sometimes it's just too much. Sometimes you hear it and you just cannot even believe that you're on the same planet with some of these people. I mean, here's the way I look at it. Here's the emotional effect. Okay, work with me on this one. I'm a sports guy. I love watching sports on TV. I love my sports teams. And, you know that feeling when you're watching your favorite sports team and you're watching them live and it's a big, huge, important game and they do something just incredible. I mean, like the playoffs just a little while ago in the NBA when LeBron James for the Cavaliers was knocking down all those shots in that one game against the Pistons. He was on fire. It was like, wow, I can't believe he just did that. Or like, I went to Boise State University in Boise, and when Boise State played the Fiesta Bowl against Oklahoma, and they did those trick plays, like that 2-point conversion with the Statue of Liberty, and you go, wow, I can't believe they just did that. Or of course, my beloved Green Bay Packers, when Brett Favre played that game after his father died, and he threw those 4 touchdown passes, and you're just like, wow, I can't believe he just did that. Well, that feeling, the opposite of that feeling, is what you get when you listen to the administration. The opposite of that. Here's the moment, right? Vice President Cheney, his office has been contacted by the Office of Oversight, Security Oversight, which is a part of the National Archives. And the job of this office is to check up on the executive branch, you know, just to do inspections and audits to make sure that if you've got security clearances and you've got top secret information, that you're treating it properly. You know, that you're following security guidelines and putting passwords on your computers and storing the files where they're supposed to be stored and, you know, just following the rules, basically. And in 2001 and 2002, Vice President Cheney's office complied with all these requests. So, you know, they'd come and they'd do their inspections and they'd certify that everything was on the up and up. Well, starting in 2003, Vice President Cheney started refusing to let these people do their job, to do oversight over the vice president's offices. First of all, in 2003, he just started, you know, not supplying reports or any, you know, answering any requests for information. In 2004, they sent one of those inspectors to do the routine security check. They do this for everybody, you know, all the offices in the executive branch, you know, all the cabinet departments and so on. It's just a routine inspection. He blocked them. His office blocked them from actually even beginning their routine inspection. So now, of course, the Democrats couldn't do much about this back before the 2006 election because we didn't have any subpoena powers or any investigative powers. We were in the minority. But now that we're in the majority, Henry Waxman, who's in charge of the Oversight Committee, has been really pressuring the vice president's office and pointing out the fact that President Bush himself signed an executive order, Executive Order 12958, in the wake of 9/11, signed this executive order to protect our classified and secure information. And of course, this is a major importance here in America. We need to protect our classified information. We're in a alleged war on terror here. So when Waxman goes and talks to or writes to the vice president's office saying, you know, you need to comply with this executive order, the vice president's office writes back. Now, here's the moment. Here's that moment where you go, wow, I can't believe he just did that. Right? He says, the vice president's office is not required to comply with the executive order that requires all of the members of the executive branch to comply with these security requests. The vice president doesn't have to comply with that order because he is not an entity within the executive branch.
What?
That's right. The vice president says he's not part of the executive branch.
What?
I know. I couldn't believe it either when I heard it, but this is his theory. Check this out. We go back to the Clinton days and remember, you know, what was the definition of is? That's amateur compared to this stuff. Boy, here's what he's saying. The vice president's office is claiming that because in the Constitution, he is declared the president of the Senate, that he's part, you know, he breaks the ties if there's a tie in the Senate. Since he's part of since he's the president of the Senate, that makes him also part of the legislative branch, so that he doesn't have to comply with what the requirements are for the executive branch. Oh, right. Okay, so because you are the vice president and you're part of the executive branch, but you also have this one little tiebreaker duty that comes up every, 3-4 years at most, to try to break a tie. Because of that, you're going to claim that you don't have to follow the laws, the law that your own president wrote that controls the security of our most precious documents, our most dangerous, top secret type of information? That's just unbelievable. I mean, like I said, it's the opposite of when you see your sports stars do something amazing. You just got to turn to the person next to you and go, did he just say that in a room full of educated adults? Who does he think he's talking to? I mean, even the most, you know, the average high schooler would have some knowledge of the Constitution that would say, the vice president, he is part of the executive branch, you know. So, of course, all the reporters, when this came out, they started hammering the White House on this. And so Dana Perino, who's the deputy White House spokesbot, got up in front and they asked her, they said, what do you think about this vice president, you know, saying that he's not part of the executive branch? And here's Dana Perino's answer.
Well, I think, as I said, I think that is an interesting constitutional question that people can debate.
An interesting constitutional question that people can debate. Well, Dana, guess what? Debate is over. The debate was over about 291 years ago when they actually wrote the Constitution. I don't know if you've seen it, if you've actually checked the words of the Constitution, if you've read it. Maybe it's not legible anymore after all of the things that the president's been using it for. But here, let me just give you a lesson, Dana. Here's your lesson. Article 2, which is the article in the Constitution that controls the executive branch. Article 2, Section 1, Paragraph 1. The executive power shall be vested in a president of the United States of America. He shall hold his office during the term of 4 years and, together with the vice president, chosen for the same term, be elected. Okay? So it's pretty cut and dried that the vice president, right there, Article 2, Section 1, is part of the executive branch. Now, what they're trying to claim is they're trying to look back to Article 1, the legislative branch, Article 1, Section 3, Paragraph 4, which says, the vice president of the United States shall be the president of the Senate, but shall have no vote unless they be equally divided. So, if you're part of the legislative branch then, Mr. Cheney, let's look at what rules you'd have to obey then. Melanie Sloan of CREW, which is the Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, points out that in 1987, the Senate created the Office of Senate Security, and part of the requirements for every member of the Senate is that they submit to the security office the physical security requirements of their office and submit to any necessary inspections. As well as that, the Senate Office of Senate Security has the right to commit investigations of suspected security violations by employees, such as Scooter Libby violating his security clearances by outing covert CIA operative Valerie Plame. So which is it, Cheney? Are you part of the executive? You're part of the legislative? Because if you're part of the executive, you got to follow that executive order and submit to security inspections. And if you're part of the legislative, you got to submit to the Office of Senate Security and submit to the security office inspections. So which is it, executive or legislative? Now, I'll tell you what I think he thinks he is. I think he's his own branch of government. That's what he thinks. Cheney thinks he's his own branch of government. He is the leader of, what should we call it? The corporate branch. How's that? You're the CEO of the corporate branch. You're the leader of the very big corporation of America. There we go. That'll fit for you. Unfortunately, Vice President Cheney, that's not in the Constitution. That's nowhere to be found in the Constitution. Now, this has gone on. Yesterday, President Bush said his office also doesn't have to comply with that executive order. That's right. The president and the vice president don't have to conform to the executive order that says the executive branch has to submit to security inspections for their top secret documents. Well, who else is going to see the most secure top secret documents in the land but the president and the vice president? Now they're trying to claim that, well, the president wrote the executive order, so he knows what he meant. He knows what he intended. He didn't intend for the vice president and the president to be under this order. What are they afraid of? What are they afraid of? I mean, this is just to determine whether or not you're handling everything securely, whether or not you're handling the documents and not letting our security secrets get out to the enemy. Why would you want to restrict that? Well, we'll take a deeper look into that right after the break. It's 17 after. I'm Russ Belville, and this is The Russ Belville Show.
Red State Refugee, Radical Russ. This is the Russ Belville Show.
Welcome back, 22 after the hour. Just want to wrap up this thing on Cheney and him claiming not to be part of the executive branch. All we got to do is look back a few years, just about to 2004. Remember that energy task force that Cheney had in 2002? You know, when he had like Ken Lay from Enron and all the oil company executives helping out to determine what the energy policy in America would be. And remember when we were requesting documents, we wanted to know, you know, Sierra Club and some other people wanted to know exactly who was at that meeting and you know, tell us the details. And Cheney was fighting against it, didn't want to give that up, and took it all the way to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court said that he didn't have to give up the documents. Well, if we go to the decision in that case, the Supreme Court said, quote, given the breadth of the discovery requests in this case, our precedent provides no support for the proposition that the executive branch shall bear the burden of invoking executive privilege. In other words, what they were saying is that Cheney didn't have to give up the documents and didn't have to claim executive privileges because the executive branch isn't required to do that. So apparently the Supreme Court thinks you're part of the executive branch too, Mr. Cheney. All right. So now that we got that wrapped up, I just couldn't let that go without mentioning it. I'm going to turn the tables here to something of a very important means here to those of us living in George Bush's America, those of us trying to make ends meet with less pay and less jobs out there for us to get by. Yeah, it's all about the money. It's all about the gold. It's all about the filthy lucre. And where I'm taking this here is to talk about something I saw that came up on the news here about Walmart. Okay, and remember, Walmart, we're talking Bentonville, Arkansas, Walmart. Walmart's been trying to get into banking. They've been trying to do this for a long, long time because they know there's plenty of money to be made in banking. I guess the billions that they're making selling us Chinese crap isn't quite enough. They need to make even more money. Well, 2 years ago, federal regulators wouldn't let Walmart offer financial services because of the issues of not enough competition and so on. Last year, they denied Walmart a charter to open a bank because they were afraid, again, the competition would crush all the smaller banks. So Walmart has decided to just get around the whole thing. They've now started to issue what's called the Walmart Money Card. Okay, now this Walmart Money Card is a partnership with General Electric, GE Money, General Electric, the defense contractor, and basically what it would allow people to do is to get this Walmart Money Card. It's kind of like a prepaid credit card, you know, prepaid debit card, where you put your money on the card and then you can use the card like a Visa and spend the money, but then, you know, it just comes off your card and comes off your balance. Well, okay, that doesn't sound like a bad thing, does it? I mean, you know, people need to be able to spend their money on a card. Well, here's the kicker. Here's where they're going to be making their money. The hidden fees. That's right, this Walmart Money Card. And you got to remember, this is going out to Walmart customers. So we're talking about the poorest people, the people who are just scraping by, you know, that have no choice but to shop at Walmart because it's the only place they can afford anything. $8.95 just to open the account. $8.95 to open the account. $4.94 a month maintenance fee. That's right, just $5 a month just to have your card. $1.95 every time you take out money. 75 cents just to check your balance. And $4.64 to make a deposit. That's right. Walmart has found a way to get people to pay Walmart for the privilege of spending their own money at Walmart. Wow. And there's no laws against this. There's no regulations against this. This is predatory lending at its worst. This is taking advantage of the poor people that have no choice but to go for this. Most people that are shopping at Walmart, they can't, you know, a lot of them, they can't get checking accounts. They don't have the kind of credit where they can get credit cards or debit cards. And so Walmart's going to do this nice altruistic service for them and get them a card and yet, you know, just charge them like crazy to use a dang thing. So I just wanted to, you know, give a little reading here to Walmart just to, you know, this is something I read the other day. And considering they're all from, you know, the heart of the Bible Belt, I thought maybe this would strike them. If one of your brethren becomes poor and falls into poverty among you, then you shall help him like a stranger or a sojourner, that he may live with you. Take no usury or interest from him, but fear your God that your brother may live with you. You shall not lend him your money for usury, nor lend him your food at a profit. Yeah, so maybe they'll hear that. Now, with the Walmart card, the next thing here is also talking about, you know, the amazing consumer debt in this country. And the consumer debt with the credit card companies is just skyrocketing here in America. The median household income in America is $46,000 a year. And the average credit card debt is $9,000 a year. Yeah, $9,000 a year for the average person who's making $46,000. And they found in 2001 that the lowest quarter, the one quarter of the lowest income families spent over 40% of their income on debt. Now, where does this fit in with the political aspects? Well, I got some interesting things to tell you about that and how it relates to the presumptive Democratic nominee, Hillary Clinton. Yeah, we're going to be talking a little bit about Hillary Clinton, the old hill dog. And if you want to get involved in the debate, the phone number here is 866-5577-377. I'll give you a little preview. I'm not a big Hillary Clinton fan. And we'll discuss why when we come back from the break. Also, if you don't get a chance to call in, you can always check us on the web at www.radicalrus.net. You can also send me an email if you like at radicalrus@gmail.com. At the end of the show, I'll be reading some of our listener emails.
The Russ Belville Show. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
The number here is 866-557-7377 or 866-5577-377. You got your common sense liberalism for the masses. I'm Radical Russ Belville. Glad to have you here. We're talking a little bit about consumer debt here in America and how the credit card companies are just raping the American public and taking advantage of predatory lending schemes to put us farther and farther and farther into consumer debt. This is one of the biggest problems we're facing in America today and one of the hugest issues that the next president is going to have to deal with. You know the current one isn't going to. Let me just give you a couple little facts on this. We'll take a look at one of these credit card companies, Capital One. You've probably seen their commercials all over, you know, what's in your wallet, Capital One. Well, did you know that the credit card companies have mailed out 6 billion credit card offers in 2005? Yeah, that's right. That's not million. 6 billion credit card offers. That's 50 credit card offers for every household in America. 50. I mean, what household's going to need 50 credit cards? Now, here's the deal, is that before, in the old days, you know, when you had MasterCard and Visa and so on, there was two types of people in the world. There was the people who could afford credit cards, and then the people who couldn't afford credit cards. I was one of those. I couldn't afford credit cards myself. I've always been a poor guy, poor working class guy here. But then Capital One had a great idea. They realized that there could be a third kind of person. There could be the kind of person who makes just enough money to pay off the interest, right? And if you look at it, that's actually the more profitable way to go. If you can continue to have someone have a big mountain of debt on their back and for the rest of their life pay you off an interest on that debt, you're going to make a whole lot more money on the interest than you're ever going to make on the principal. And like I was saying, in 2001, more than one quarter of the lowest income families spent about 40% of their income just on debt repayment. Now, according to the Christian Science Monitor, financial and credit companies made $7 million in campaign contributions back in 2006. Commercial banks made another $25 million in contributions to candidates from both parties. And guess who the number one recipient is of banking and credit card donations? Hillary Rodham Clinton. So I got to ask you, are you ready for a Hillary Clinton presidency? Is this the kind of person you want leading our country, Hillary Clinton, the kind of person who's going to take money hand over fist from these companies that are raping the poor people of America, that are just decimating the savings and the finances of the average American worker, the average American person? You know, I'm really, really worried about Hillary Clinton here. You know, everybody keeps telling me she's the presumptive nominee, she's leading in the polls, she's got the most money. But I'm not going to support a Hillary Clinton candidacy. I just cannot do it. I cannot accept it. You know, people say, you know, you got to support Hillary. You know, any Democrat's going to be better than any Republican. Bull. I say vote for the person, vote for their issues. And if someone doesn't stand up for the issues you stand up for, then they don't deserve your vote. Period. End of sentence. And as far as I'm concerned, Hillary Clinton does not support me. If she's going to be taking all that money from the banking and credit industries, what's she going to do to try to restrain the predatory lending practices of these financial behemoths? I don't think she's going to turn and bite the hand that feeds her. You know, another story came out about Hillary Clinton recently. This was Michael Moore. He's got his new movie coming out, the movie Sicko, that's about the way that the pharmaceutical and healthcare industries are hurting the average American. This is another one of the major issues we have to deal with in the next coming presidency. And guess who the number two recipient of cash, campaign cash, is from the healthcare industries and the insurance industries? That's right, Hillary Rodham Clinton. And it's so embarrassing to the Clinton camp that Harvey Weinstein, who's, you know, producer, was distributing this movie for Miramax, for I think it's Miramax, I could be wrong on that, for Michael Moore, actually went to Michael Moore. He's a big friend, you know, Weinstein's a big friend of the Clintons. And he went to Michael Moore and said, please, Mike, please take that scene out where you tell everyone that Hillary is the number two recipient of healthcare money. And Michael Moore said, nope, not going to do it. I've got to do the right thing. So here's another issue, healthcare, where we're going to need a major change in just the entire paradigm of how healthcare is run in this country. I believe that we cannot run healthcare as a for-profit industry. It is immoral to profit off the suffering of human beings. I'm all for capitalism. Don't get me wrong. I am all for market capitalism. I love it. I love America. I love our businesses and the way our capitalism works to a point. And that point is when people are dying and people have no choice but to participate in the market. Okay? And when it comes to healthcare, if you're dying, you don't have a choice. You don't get to choose whether or not you want to get treated. It's get treated or die. And the healthcare industry has been taking advantage of that for years. We spend more in America for our healthcare than any other industrialized country, and we get less for it than any other industrialized country. So is Hillary Clinton going to stand up to the insurance industries and the healthcare industries after they've donated so much money to her campaign coffers? You know, I don't think so. So what do you think? Do you think you're going to support a Hillary Clinton presidency? Are you ready for that? You can let me know at 866-5577-377, but not me. I can't do it. You know, I held my nose when we nominated John Kerry. I was a Howard Dean guy. I was, you know, totally into the Howard Dean movement. I thought that finally the grassroots are rising up. Finally, we're going to get someone who responds to the common man. And then, of course, the media tore him down with that whole Scream thing. You know, that was all manufactured crap to get rid of Howard Dean. And we had to take John Kerry. We had to accept John Kerry as our nominee. And I worked hard for Kerry. I went door to door. I, you know, worked on phone banks to try to get John Kerry nominated and not nominated but elected. And then when the Ohio vote went down and he just conceded, you know, right there at like 1 a.m, that did it for me. This guy won't even stand up for counting our votes. Won't even stand up for the poor people in Cleveland and in the black neighborhoods who had to stand in lines because they didn't have enough voting machines because of all the Republican corruption that was trying to suppress the vote. And he just backed down. So I've learned my lesson. I've had a Democratic nominee who says one thing and then, you know, wants to pander to the corporate interests or not fight for the American people. I'm not going to do it again. I'm not going to support a Hillary Clinton candidacy. Here's another reason why I can't support a Hillary Clinton candidacy. In my youngest brother's lifetime, I have two brothers, and my youngest brother was born in 1983. And in my youngest brother's lifetime, there has always been a Bush or a Clinton in the White House. I mean, imagine that. Imagine, you know, he's 24. So for his entire life, there's always been someone named Bush or Clinton in the White House. I mean, you go Reagan Bush, Bush Quayle, Clinton Gore, Bush Cheney. And now you want another 4 years or even 8 years of another Clinton? I mean, I don't think that's what the Founding Fathers had in mind when they were thinking about a constitutional democracy. They were trying to get away from familial monarchies and from being run by just a certain bloodline. And I think it's time we get away from that, too, and elect someone else who's not a Clinton or a Bush. I mean, if you want to bring back one of the names from the 90s Democratic tickets, for God's sake, make it Al Gore. I could take that. I could take Al Gore in the White House. In fact, how about Al Gore and Bill Richardson? That's my kind of ticket. Gore-Richardson. Boy, if we could come up with that ticket, I am behind it 100%. I mean, look, you just got to look back at Hillary's record. Look at what she does and says. She's always pandering to the center. She's always trying to get that centrist vote. She's always fishing in the Republican pond. And our politics these days are so messed up. They're so skewed from what reality is. I mean, we've been tacked so far to the right that anyone who's just a moderate Republican is now called a lefty. I mean, Hillary, for all intents and purposes, as I'm concerned, is just a moderate Republican, if you ask me. And it shows. It shows in her stances. I mean, just a little while ago, she was part of that a couple of senators who got together for an anti-flag-burning amendment to the Constitution. Yeah, this is a lefty, right? A lefty who supports free speech, a lefty who believes in political protest. Come on, Hillary. I mean, you went to Wellesley, for God's sake. I mean, don't you understand that, you know, flag burning is a protected right? It is the ultimate right of free speech. Only a country secure enough in its free speech rights could possibly let someone burn its flag. It's a, not that I'm for flag burning. I'm just saying, you know, here's someone that will talk one thing and do another. And she was also part of that anti-video game violence thing. Remember that when Grand Theft Auto, there was a secret code and you could see boobies in the video game? And she came out against that. That was a big, big issue. Look, there's far more important things to deal with, Hillary. Like the war, Oh, yeah, we can't forget that. She was one of those people that voted for the authorization to use force in Iraq. And, you know, hey, look, if you didn't think Bush was going to go to war if given the authorization, you're too naive to be president. Biden, Dodd, Edwards, I'm looking in your direction. Yeah, so Hillary Clinton, not going to happen for me. Boy, I got to get somebody who's going to stand up for us liberals, stand up for the common people. I'm Radical Russ. Let me know what you think of the Hillary Clinton campaign at 866-55-77-377. We'll be taking your calls right after this break.
Russ now, 866-557-7377. This is the Russ Belville Show.
Yes, it is. And we're talking about the potential candidacy of Hillary Clinton. I'm going to go to the phone lines now. I've got the exciting Becky in Boring, Oregon. Becky, you're on the Russ Belville Show.
Hi, Russ. You know, when I hear people on the radio that work with Hillary and say, well, people may not like her, but when they meet her, then they see who she is and they really like her. And I think, why? She still stands for the same things. What does she do? Throw fairy dust in your face? And then you're saying, oh, now I get it.
Yeah. Well, she's charming. Well, that's nice. I'm glad she's a charming person. I care what she does.
Maybe she whispers her secret agenda in your ear and says, privately, this is what I stand for. I mean, it just doesn't make sense why meeting her changes you. But you know the phrase where it took a Republican to open up China? Because
yeah.
That's having somebody like Hillary or Bill sets us up, because the Democrats are pretty quiet when Clinton deregulates radio stations.
Oh, yeah.
When he opens up free trade a lot more. We're just really quiet. When he allows old growth to be cut, it's like he set us up so that the Republicans could take us down.
Well, you know, I've always said that Bill Clinton is probably one of the best Republican presidents we've ever had.
Well,
you know,
he's actually the only smart Republican we've ever had, because the others' IQs are kind of in the...
Yeah, kind of low there. Well, thank you for your opinion, Becky. I really appreciate the call. Let's go also to the phone lines here. We're going to go all the way deep into the heart of Red America to my father, the Rockin' Johnny B. Yeah, the Rockin' Johnny B's on the line from Nampa, Idaho. Hey, Dad, what's up?
Hey, Ruddy, what's going on?
Hey, we're talking about Hillary. What you got for me on Hillary?
Hillary Dillery Doc. Here's a woman who married a guy who was president of the United States, who I never voted for. I won't vote for her. I won't vote for him. Is he running again or two?
I don't think he can, according to the Constitution.
Can he run for vice president?
You know, I've wondered about that. I've wondered, like, if someone has served two terms as a president, whether or not constitutionally they'd be legally allowed to serve as vice president. I know there's some sort of deal there, like when Truman took over, and, you know, they can, if it's less than 2 years, they can finish out the term or something like that. You'd have to ask someone more legal knowledge than me.
I'm worried about this.
Well, I am too. I don't make me have to vote for Nader again.
Oh, my God. I'm telling you, Russ, that our country's bad enough shape as it is. I want this credit card thing. I want to lay one credit card thing on you. Isn't this weird? Credit card companies, well, all companies, banking, everything else, can charge interest on interest.
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah, interest on interest. They can raise your rates, without telling you. They can do this thing. I forget the exact name of the practice, but it's where they bill on a 2 month cycle. So even if you've paid your bill off, you still have to owe interest on what it would have been in the next month. I mean, it's insane.
You can't get out of debt.
Yeah, and that's the thing. We need to get America out of debt.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah. Or you can be like this idiot, a friend of mine, who says, "Well, don't worry about the." Don't worry about the deficit, for God's sake. The government can always print more money. This is one of those Republican people.
Yeah, that's what you get from your right-wing radio talking points there. Just print more money. That's all we have to do.
Or power to mine. That's why we got the deficit, for God's sake.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks for calling in, Dad. I appreciate it. Yeah, regular listeners of the Russ Belville Show, you'll know that my dad, the Rockin' Johnny B, is going to call in from time to time. And, you know, it's all about family for me. That's I think it's the number one thing in America is our strong, you know, strong family ties. And so, yeah, I'm not going to hesitate to have Dad show up every now and then and dispense some of his wisdom. He's, you know, lived a few years longer than me and has some good things to say. Well, it's 51 after the hour. When we come back from the break, we're going to wrap up the show. I'm going to take a look at some of the emails that I've received from the listeners. If you'd like to send an email and possibly get it read on the air, you can send it to radicalruss@gmail.com.
KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com. This is the Russ Belville Show, the winner of America's search for the next great progressive talk radio star. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
All right, 55 after the hour. We're getting toward the end of the Russ Belville Show for this week, so we're going to turn to the internet and the Radical Russ inbox. Yeah, spam, spam, spam. That's mostly what you get in the inbox. And you know, I work in information technology. That's my background. So one of the things I want to do here is to try to attack some of the spam that we're getting in all our inboxes. Boy, you know the stuff. It gets forwarded from person to person to person to person. And the problem is when you send when all this spam is going through, you know, you're just dumping all of this junk into our inboxes.
It's not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes.
Oh, that's right. Senator Ted Stevens, thank you for explaining how the internet worked there. I really appreciate it. Well, the one that I just received was this email. It's called Jay Leno Hits the Nail on the Head. And that kind of bugged me because it took my whole nail on the head gimmick there. But anyway, the email goes like this. It says, you know, blah, blah, blah. Two-thirds of the American people are unhappy with the direction of the country. And the email goes on to say how we're all a bunch of spoiled brats. Look how good we've got it. We don't have bombs going off. We have all the food we could possibly want. We have big screen TVs. Blah, 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 blah. And at the first, you're thinking, yeah, maybe Jay Leno would say something like that. But as it goes on, it says, and everybody's dissatisfied with this president. He's so hated now, but he led us through 9/11, and he cut taxes to fix the recession, and he kept us safe from another terrorist attack. And I'm starting to think, wait a minute, that doesn't sound like Jay Leno, because he's kind of keeps it nonpartisan. And at the very end, he says something about, with all the hurricanes and the floods and the fires and the terrorism, is this any time to be taking God out of the Pledge of Allegiance? Well, folks, it's just not true. Jay Leno had nothing to do with any of that writing. Well, not quite nothing. He did write the little joke at the end about, you know, taking God out of the Pledge of Allegiance, but that was in reference to hurricanes and floods and such. Where this really came from was a guy out there at WorldNet Daily, a.k.a. Wingnut Daily, the big internet site for all the right-wingers. And this guy was named Craig R. Smith, and he's the one who wrote all that pro-Bush, you know, Americans got it so good. So anytime you get one of these emails, I just want to encourage you to check out Snopes.com, S-N-O-P-E-S, Snopes.com, and that'll debunk all that stuff. I also got an email from Sarah who asked about whether or not Brother Gore was, if I saw Brother Gore preaching about Saddam's weapons of mass destruction. Well, Sarah, that was 12 years ago, and Saddam had weapons back then, and he doesn't have weapons now. So, see, Gore was right then, and Gore was right now. And then as far as the Paris Hilton stuff that I played last week.
CNN, the most trusted name in Paris news.
Yeah, Steph wrote an email in to me to let me know that this clip.
He ruled that he was remanding Ms. Hilton to the sheriff's custody to serve the remainder of her sentence at the Century Regional Detention
Center. No!
Which I riffed on quite a bit about this guy screaming no. Well, it turns out that this guy is Jake Bird. He's the guy from the Jimmy Kimmel Show who always shows up. You know, he showed up at the Michael Jackson trial and such. So let's just clarify that. It was just kind of a joke, and it wasn't really real people that were upset that badly. And finally, Joe wrote in when we were talking about the separation of church and state, and he said, remember the words of Napoleon. It's religion that keeps the poor from killing the rich. And that's why the GOP keeps invoking religion. interesting thought. Well, I'm Radical Russ. We'll be here next week on your radio dial, so tune in. I'd love to talk to all of you. Check me out on the internet at RadicalRuss.net.